and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. It's Farmer Friday. We're really excited to take your calls and questions all throughout the show. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Yes, again, it is Farmer Friday. Our phone lines will be open all throughout our show today. The number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or email us radio@agphd.com. So we're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a second. Before we do, I would just say next week is Thanksgiving, and we are getting toward the end of the year here. And a lot of farmers, I know today there are a lot of prepaid dates that end either today or next week, or, you know, certainly on chem, it would be next month for a lot of the chemical products. But if you're looking at prepaying, we would just really encourage you, make sure you talk to a few people, you know, shop around a little bit, talk about pricing, all that kind of stuff. But the big thing is make sure you know what you're getting before you prepay. Because too often we have talked to farmers, and I'll just give you a couple of quick examples. One where a farmer we'd been talking to for a long time, it's like, oh, yep, I'm getting harness extra, and I'm talking rate with them, everything else. And then come to find out, the dealer actually gave him harness extra 5.6. It's like, well, this is not harness extra. You just overpaid on what you thought you were getting, and now we got to change our recommendation and everything else because you got the high-load atrazine thing, and that product's not worth as much money. And the farmer was just going, well, what? I thought I was getting the right thing. There are different formulations of everything. I shouldn't say everything. There are different formulations with many common products out there. Whether we start talking, and often here on our show, we even will say things like harness, words like harness, surpass, outlook, dual. Okay, well, there are different formulations of harness, different ones of surpass, and different ones of dual. And if you don't know exactly what you're getting, then we got a real problem. Or let me rephrase that. You may be overpaying, and you may get an incorrect rate out there, so you're not happy with the product in the end. So just make sure that when you start talking to these different dealers that you're actually comparing apples to apples. And it's with a lot of those Group 15s where we see most of the problem. But then I'd take it even to seed. Yeah, I mean, there are so many different things that you can get out there, so many traits, and it starts to get confusing after a little while. So I would just encourage you, you know, make sure you know what you're getting. Make sure you ask plenty of questions. Talk about return policies and can you get your money back? Can you get interest on your money? Because there are places that do that. Can you exchange things later? Because you just never know. And we all go into each year as farmers, I feel like, with a lot of the best intentions, but you just never know when hail's going to hit or flood or drought or anything that could dramatically change your plans. And you got to make sure that you can get out of whatever it was that you prepaid for in November or December. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
All right, Brian, I think I'll let you read this one. It's from Kingston in Zimbabwe. And I was just thinking about, I wonder what time it is in Zimbabwe. They're 8 hours ahead of where we're at right now. But anyway, Kingston has got a few questions around potassium today.
Okay. So
he's wondering about the formula and how we figure that out.
Yeah.
And just that he's got understands it correctly. And I guess the big thing, Kingston, is just having a base saturation test. If you have that as part of your soil test, then we just look at where our percentage is of potassium, and we'd like to get that up to at least 4.
Yeah, okay. So this is a common question that we get, because when you look at parts per million on a soil test, that only tells you part of the answer with potassium. The trouble with potassium is if you don't have enough potassium in ratio to some other nutrients, you're not going to get the potassium either into the plant or it's not going to get utilized by that plant. So that's why we like to see both adequate parts per million and adequate in terms of a base saturation test. So generally speaking, we're going to say, all right, you got to look at your yield goal, then look at pounds, and then convert that over to parts per million. But then also, kind of as a minimum on the base saturation, we're going to say 4% in a lot of soils. Now, it might be a little more than that. It's never going to be less, but it might be a little bit more than that. Let's say you had really light soil. But anyway, just basically how you convert that, I'll just give you a quick example. We get a lot of soil tests in that are 2% base saturation K, and let's say we wanted to go to 4%. Okay, that's pretty simple because basically you have to double the number. And so if, let's say, we're at 200 parts per million, then theoretically we should just need to get to roughly, and it's never going to be exact, but roughly we would just need to then get to 400 parts per million. Okay, so if you're going from 200 to 400 parts per million, let's assume we're working with 6-inch soil samples, 0 to 6 inch. 6 inches represents 2 million pounds across an acre. Now, I don't know anything about Zimbabwe in terms of, I'm guessing you might be metric there. So when we start talking metric, I don't know exactly what the conversions are. You can convert it yourself. But all I know is if I've got 200 parts per million and I'm at 2% base saturation K and I'm trying to go to 4, that means I need to go to roughly 400 parts per million on potassium. So I need to double that. And if I'm trying to add 200 more parts per million in a 0 to 6 inch soil test, I have to multiply things times 2. And the reason why I have to multiply times 2 is because in every 6 inches of soil across an acre, it weighs roughly 2 million pounds. So if I have parts per million, I just need to convert, or I need to multiply times 2 to convert parts per million to pounds per acre. So now all of a sudden my potassium goes from 200 parts per million, I need up to 400 parts per million by adding roughly 400 pounds of actual potassium. Potash that we will commonly use in the United States, for example, is 50% potassium. It's 60% K2O potassium, but it's only 50% actual potassium. So I take my 400 pounds I need to add, I would divide that by 50%, and that gets me 800 pounds of potash I would have to put out. I'm probably not going to put that much out in one shot. I'd do it a little bit over time. So that's how I would run the numbers. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen. From conception to completion, there's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
Pentair Hypro 3D nozzles are your premier choice for fungicide applications. Syngenta fungicide application field trials have shown Hypro 3D nozzles provide a yield advantage of up to 10% over other nozzles, maximizing the return on your fungicide investment. Learn more at pentair.com/hypro.
Your soybeans are in the bin, but the game isn't over yet. Score more points this year by taking your beans to the end zone. At $10 beans, every point of moisture below your target takes away 15 cents per bushel. Reclaim that lost yield with the End Zone Bin System from FarmShop MFG.
A lot goes into keeping a precision operation moving. The inputs you choose have to deliver results. New Dallaro Complete Fungicide from Bayer offers unmatched consistency and the most complete disease control available. Your corn and soybeans are protected and yields higher, even in unpredictable conditions. With Dallaro Complete, you get results you can count on to help keep your precision operation running smoothly. Always read and follow label instructions. To learn more, visit DallaroComplete.us today.
Back, you're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Our phone lines will be open all throughout the show today at 844 844 AG-PHD. You can also send us an email if you'd like, radio@agphd.com. Got a bunch of emails we're going to try and get to a little bit later in the show. It's a great way to send a soil test or a picture of what's going on your farm if you've got a challenging agronomic question or a situation that you want us to help you through. Let's start off on the phone lines here. Got Brian Sorby with us today with TopCon. How you doing, Brian?
Good. How are you guys doing?
Not too bad. Not too bad. All right. You guys got a lot of stuff going on. I wanted to ask you a few questions, if you don't mind, about TAP. First of all, we're hearing a lot about TopCon and TAP. You wouldn't believe how many questions there are about this. Can you talk to us a little bit about what is TAP and what can I do with it?
Yeah, sure. Absolutely. So TopCon Agriculture Platform is basically what, you know, TAP is an acronym for. It's our cloud services platform where, you know, effectively, we're trying to put as many tools as possible in the grower's fingertips, and make it cloud accessible. So it's effectively where all of our digital services as a company go, and effectively, you know, in a real short phrase, you would say that it's kind of data from anywhere, and regardless of, you know, the brand of equipment you have, the type of precision technology you have on your farm, it really doesn't make any difference. You know, TAP works with everybody's data.
You know, this is an interesting part of agriculture right now with all the data that we're generating on the farm. And I know, just thinking about our own farm, all the different pieces of information that we've got, but tying that all together is a little bit of a challenge. So what is unique about TAP? And when growers look at this compared to other platforms, what are they going to notice?
You know, I think the biggest thing that jumps out to you is just the ease of use and just our colorblind approach to data. You know, we really don't differentiate between the data that our own consoles and precision systems generate versus the data that's made, on competitive consoles or even OEM consoles. So one of the philosophies that we've tried to have from the beginning when we set out to develop TAP was, you know, let's say some level of humility, knowing that, you know, obviously customers don't have TopCon equipment in the cabs of their tractors universally. We're well aware of that. And in fact, most farmers have precision technology from a number of different sources, a number of different colors. Nobody's really living inside of one particular silo. But yet the providers that are in this space right now tend to try to put growers in silos from our perspective. You know, you have to live inside of a particular platform or a particular service in order to get the most benefit out of that service. And that kind of disenfranchises customers to some degree. Growers, have a tendency to have to jump all in with one particular provider, and it really limits their ability to make some choices on their operation. So when we set out to do TAP, we wanted to do something different. We wanted to say, look, regardless of where all this data comes from, or what source it is, or what agronomic function it's served on the farm, it needs to be ingested very quickly, very cleanly, with minimal effort from the end user. And we should be able to generate a map, or what we call a visualization, within seconds. It should really flow that quickly. So I think when a customer first signs up, it's free to join. It's free to, you know, start uploading data right away. There's no limits. He'll notice right away that this thing, you know, it really doesn't differentiate the quality of the data or the source of the data from one place to the next. And generally speaking, most guys who go and kick tires on this thing are looking at their data within seconds. And I think that's the thing that jumps out the most.
You know, when we look at different platforms, you mentioned, you said you're colorblind. I like that, because a lot of times it seems like everything is green or everything is red or something like that. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's the easiest to use or that they're the best in all aspects. So it's kind of a neat approach here to, we'll work with anybody's stuff, but man, that had to be a lot of programming to make that all happen.
It is. It was a monumental effort, and quite honestly, it can't come fast enough. You know, this is a big effort that we're trying to bite off. We saw the problem that the industry faces in terms of all this data living in different silos, and to be the first provider to really bring a solution, an affordable solution, to the marketplace that can make sense of all this data is a huge effort, and it costs a lot of money and a lot of time and things like that. But I think we launched TAP in its very first, you know, infant form about a year ago. We actually launched it at your guys' field day, which was a huge, huge event for us. And it's improving every couple of months, you know, with more and more releases that hit the market, and that data ingestion engine just continues to get more and more mature and more robust. So as we head into spring now, you know, we're closing out this year, but we're already looking at the spring release schedule, and we've got some really exciting things coming out this spring that make this whole notion of data from anywhere even more powerful and robust. And the message is really clear to the growers that are looking at something like this is, you know, keep the technology that you have. If you're in love with the screen you have in your cab, if you like your auto guidance system, whether it came from John Deere or it came from one of our competitors, stick with that. Obviously, we want you to love TAP so much that when you're ready for an upgrade or you're thinking about that older piece of equipment that you want to maybe get auto steering or maybe get a rate controller on, we'd love for you to come to TopCon. We got some of the best there is, but it doesn't have to be that way. And there's no, you know, there's a very low upfront cost to get in this thing.
Yeah, that's pretty neat. Now, I want to talk just a little bit, if you don't mind sharing, what you're doing with grain carts, because I think this is pretty cool. And I know for our own farm, keeping track of everything at harvest is sometimes a challenge. So if you can make that easier, I'm all in.
Yeah, so one of the things that a lot of people don't realize about TopCon is that, you know, back in 2015, we purchased a company in Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin called Digistar. And if you have a grain cart with a scale on it, there's a very good chance that you're familiar with the Digistar brand of GT indicators. And these indicators, you know, they get sold through a lot of different OEM channels, you know, Kinsey and Brandt and Unverfurth and J&M. And all these carts are going out with scales on them. What we did when we launched TAP was we decided, look, you know, this grain cart that's running around the field is really a fairly valuable sensor that tends to only get looked at in the context of that scale indicator that hangs on the side of the cart. But what if that sensor that runs around the field could actually be connected to the cloud and uploading data in real time? Now all of a sudden becomes a very interesting piece of equipment in the sense that it's kind of a secondary yield sensor that you have running on every field that you have. And if you look at it through the context of yield data from an agronomic perspective, which I'm sure you're well aware of, you know, yield data is notorious for having some problems. It hasn't proven itself to be the holy grail of agronomic data just because yield monitors fall out of calibration, you know, whatever happens to be the case, but that yield data just hasn't been the rock solid, you know, piece of information that comes off the farm. So what is the ultimate ground truth of yield data has always been the scale. And when grain carts started putting scales out there, Digistar's business went through the roof. We acquired them in 2015. So there's a large population of these sensors sitting out there that once connected to the cloud, now you have that ultimate ground truth sensor really confirming yield, making sure that the data on that sensor uploads to the cloud reliably. So now you have all of your loads, all of that gross weight reading in geospatial format, meaning that you actually can track the whereabouts of these grain carts historically, and you have that at your fingertips. And then so sharing that data, you know, to file your crop reports, your yield reports in the fall, all of that is digitalized now. And so pushing that to the FSA office or whatever you have to do, or your insurance carrier, it all becomes very, very easy, not to mention just the traceability of the loads that come off of fields and the confirmation that whatever load goes into the grain bin or goes into town, where it actually came from. So it's really exciting. We call it Smart Cart, and there's an upgrade kit for guys who already have a Digistar indicator. They can very easily get connected. If you have an older legacy indicator that can't, you know, be digitalized, we have upgrade paths for that too. If you have another brand or whatever it happens to be, it's the smart carts really carries a lot of interest. Guys are wondering what they can do with that green cart.
Yeah, that's really exciting. We're talking to Brian Sorby with TopCon. Brian, we're out of time, but where can we find more information?
Well, the easiest way is to check us out on the web. You can find us all over social media. That's real easy. But on the web, we are at topconagriculture.com. And if you want to go kick the tires on TAP, it's real simple. It's just TAP.TopConAgriculture.com. And I'd invite everybody to check us out. We got a great story to tell, and we're kind of a well-guarded secret in the industry, if you ask.
Yeah, thanks, Brian. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, Swift Activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
Fill once, plant all day. The Thrive 3D application system from FMC is a revolutionary in-furrow crop protection platform that plants up to 480 acres between refills. The Thrive 3D application system mounts to most major planter brands and can be yours at no cost with the FMC Freedom Pass program. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
Did you know soybean diseases like white mold and sudden death syndrome can survive in your soil even after rotating crops? Prevention of these diseases is a constant battle, and yield loss from an infection can be devastating. The right management plan makes all the difference. Keep your beans safe next spring with Heads Up Seed Treatment. Heads Up guards your seed treatment from both white mold and SDS. Stay protected and profitable by asking to have your seed pre-treated with Heads Up. Learn more at headsupst.com.
No matter what time of the year it is on your farm, with a Bayer Plus Rewards program, earning and redeeming rewards are always in season. Because when you buy two or more eligible seed or crop protection products throughout the year, you earn $3 per acre in cashback rewards. Cash you can redeem and reinvest in your farm later in the season. That's Bayer Plus Rewards, and that's how we're helping make every part of your season, well, rewarding. Visit MyBayerPlus.com to learn more. See program terms and conditions for full details.
Resistant weeds got you down? Knock out tough-to-kill herbicide-resistant weeds like Palmer Amaranth and Water Hemp with Tough 5-EC. Manufactured by Beltrum Crop Protection, Tough 5-EC is a selective contact herbicide for post-emergence control of actively growing broadleaf weeds. Add Tough 5-EC to your post-emergence tank mix for enhanced control with no concerns about residual or carryover injury. Ask your local retailer about Tough 5-EC or visit BeltramUSA.com. Together, we can get tough on weeds. Always read and follow label instructions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior in our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at SoilWarrior.com.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We'd love to hear what's going on in your farm, or if you have an agronomic question, we'd love to help. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. Let's head down to Mississippi. We got Jeremy on with us right now. Jeremy, thanks for joining us.
How are y'all doing today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. What's happening on your farm today?
We are having this thing called fall. We haven't seen it in a long time, you know, where it's not hot, it's not cold, it's dry, and the leaves are turning, and you're actually able to get field work done. It's quite pleasant. Pleasant, to be honest.
It's nice. We get a couple days of that every year, and then it turns right to winter, usually.
So this is actually, I call our third week of fall, and it looks like we got another couple days before the rain sits in for us. We've been with an active hurricane season we've had. We've been very, very wet all fall. So this is nice to get a dry stretch to put some fields back together and get some fertilizer out for next year.
Okay, talk to us about that. So we get a lot of questions about fall fertility. And I know where we're at, our ground is going to freeze hard for 6 months. You aren't afforded that luxury. It's just too warm and too nice down there, I think. But what is fall fertility? I'm just joking with you here, little Jeremy. What's fall fertility like down there? Is it P and K mainly, or is it other things too?
It's lime P and K. So we sample yearly on a 2.5 acre grid. And first thing, especially behind the corn and the cotton, we want to make sure we get our lime out, keep our pH up where we want it to be. Once we get that done, we jump right into put P and K out, variable rate the whole farm. We did something a little different this year. We had been putting out with an airplane. Gave us all winter to do it because you can put out with the plane when the ground's wet. But we got a Kuhn 3-point-inch spreader this year, and I've been very impressed with it. It holds a good bit of fertilizer, and we've been able to cover a lot of ground with it every day.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, it's interesting. You know, the fall fertility thing, we get a lot of questions from non-farmers. So why are you putting plant food out when you aren't putting a crop right with it? Well, there's a lot of work to do when you are trying to get that crop in, and getting one more job out of the way is a big deal. Now, with your lime and with the rain that comes, how have you ever done any sampling to see exactly how long it takes to start that pH change?
I haven't. I'm sure the research has been done. We try to put it in the fall, and then we incorporate it with our tillage program. So if we can get it out in front of any of the tillage and get it worked in the ground, we always feel like a lime application 1 year usually lasts you or 2 or 3 years of keeping your pH where it needs to be.
Sure.
But I've always felt the great thing about Verberate is you put out what you need, but you almost have to stay on top of it because what you need moves every year. So if you put out half the field, well, then the other half's going to change, or a quarter of it might change a little more the next year. So, and our rain has been so variable the last couple of years. We've been extremely wet, more than average the last 2 years. So that is so many factors in there in my mind that changes that fall fertility. So it's just been a good standard procedure of ours to sample, get your lime out, get it incorporated, and then get your P&K out and get it incorporated. And then you've got your rows. We bed everything up. And then that way in the springtime, the first day, the first window you have that's beautiful and nice to plant, you're planting. So you're not trying to work on everything else out.
Yep, you bet. It absolutely sets the table for a successful spring, no doubt about that. One last question for you, Jeremy. I know you've got a lot of different crops you could potentially choose from where you're at in Mississippi. Are you looking to switch the rotation up much for next year, or are there any opportunities opening up for you where a guy could actually make a little money?
You know, soybean prices have jumped up a little bit, which looks good. We've always felt, you know, when you get $7 beans or $12 or $7 corn or $12 beans, that kind of throws a lot of things out of the, the loop.
Yep.
But there's something to be said of it just going back to just straight farming in a rotation. We do corn and cotton in a one-to-one rotation, and we do corn and rice and soybeans, and 2 years soybeans, 1 year rice. And that kind of fits our acreage, our soil type acreage really well. It doesn't overwhelm our infrastructure. If we have 50% or 60% of the farm in one crop, well then grain bins, harvesting, that really bottlenecks on us and we overload our infrastructure. But if we have start planting our rice, then we go to soybeans, then we go to cotton, use that same planter for three months and you just drag that overhead over lots of acres. And it works out really good, and you make your money on your yields.
Absolutely.
Or you're supposed to.
Yep.
That's the game plan.
Yeah, it's always best laid plans, right? But you know, there are some opportunities. Like you mentioned, the soybean price looks really good right now, and it doesn't happen all the time. So when that happens, we got to enjoy it, and hopefully get some fantastic soybean yields going into next year. We're talking with Jeremy down in Mississippi. Thanks so much, Jeremy. Really appreciate hearing about what's going on in your operation. Good luck here as you're getting all that fertilizer work done.
Will do. Thank you.
Head over to Ohio. We got Keith with us. Keith, you had to love hearing Jeremy say, man, thanks for getting that soybean price up. I know you've done a lot of work over the years on various boards, but man, that's really fun when we see things come together like this.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting times now in agriculture again that we got some grain prices, both corn and soybeans. That's pretty exciting, even the wheat price. So everything cycles, and all the work we do, you know, thank goodness we work with all these other countries to make it all happen.
So, Keith, what's it look like here for the next few months in terms of exports and just our relations with some of these foreign countries? You know, when you're involved with USB and international marketing, I mean, what does that look like? What do you think the outlook will be?
Well, yeah, I think with China, you know, it's really looks really promising because, yeah, basically their supplies, you know, their corn reserves are valued at over $10 a bushel, and soybeans are, you know, up there at 18, 19 and dying exchange, and they're really needing grain because, you know, they're coming out of the swine fever, and they had a short crop over there. And then we got all these smaller nations that's really stepping up now, you know, buying grain. So, you know, it's just exciting times to be in the protein business.
Yeah, and China is really our biggest one. And from what I've been hearing, we're seeing a lot more pig numbers there, and just their supplies were so low. And then you couple that with the fact that South America is, from everything I've been hearing, basically out of grain at this point, you know, for a little while here. So it seems kind of like we're the only game in town. So I'm optimistic here for the next couple, 3 months. Should I be that optimistic, Keith?
Well, I really think we should be, because Brazil even bought beans off of us here a couple weeks ago, and you know, and they're looking at some dry weather down there with this La Nina, and so you know, in the United States again, you know, with the dry weather, really hurt the crop this year. The yields, you know, nationwide, as we all know, are down. That we were fortunate here in Southwest Ohio that it's very spotty, but we had really great crops here, so we were very fortunate over here.
So in terms of that marketing side, what's it look like with biotech? I mean, is the fact that we have Roundup Ready or dicamba tolerant or 2,4-D tolerant, I mean, on the soybean end of things, is that hurting us, or do most countries not care so much anymore?
No, we're getting over the hump of that. You know, that everybody's pretty much aboard. You know, Europe's our biggest, you know, challenge on the biotech, and I don't know if, you know, if we'll ever get going there. But again, you know, they buy a lot of crops in South America that they think are GMOs, and, you know, they're not and everything. So, and it's interesting in Europe, you know, they feed all their livestock. They do get GMO. You know, they don't get non-GMO. So it's a political thing over there, but it's going to be hard to ever go with that hump, I think.
So anything new and different that you're working on, or, you know, like USB and anybody else that you're dealing with is working on for some of this international trade?
Well, it's just a constant, you know, we just keep working with USEC. You know, we're in every country now. And, you know, it's just great to have communications with all these countries and bringing them, you know, newer products. This high oleic bean, you know, we've been working with that for years. And, you know, eventually here in the next year or so, I think we're going to get over the hump with that, because it's got great industrial uses, plus the human health thing and everything's very positive.
Yeah, yep, absolutely it is. Well, again, we've been talking to you. Keith Kemp, he is out in Ohio. Keith, thanks a lot for the time, and thanks for all the service that you do for all of us farmers out there.
Thank you, guys.
You bet.
Have a good one.
Yep, you too.
It's Farmer Friday on Ag PhD Radio. Our phone lines are open at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
It's about time. Applied at Planting, new Xyway 3D fungicide from FMC delivers foliar disease protection from planting to harvest. Active ingredient flutriafol moves from the soil through the corn as it grows for inside-out protection from roots to tassel. For season-long protection, choose first-of-its-kind Enfuro Xyway 3D fungicide. To learn more, call 815-362-7747 today. Always read and follow all label directions.
You would never plant seed or apply herbicide with a 20% success rate. So why are you still applying phosphorus fertilizer with a maximum availability of only 20%? Double your phosphate availability and increase yields with NutriCharge from AgroTech USA. NutriCharge's patent-pending technology protects phosphorus from negative chemical reactions that tie up your fertilizer investment. NutriCharge performs across all soil types and pHs. Contact AgroTech USA or your local Van Dees supply representative today.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
When it comes to innovative herbicide formulations, you know Nufarm. Nufarm brings you Credit Extreme, the herbicide with dual salt technology that makes all the difference. Faster uptake, quicker rain fastness, and better control in variable weather, something we've all had our fair share of. When you need more powerful weed control for challenges like lamb's quarters and velvet leaf, with excellent safety to Roundup Ready crops, you need Credit Extreme. Nufarm and Credit Extreme, here to help.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio on a Farmer Friday. If you'd like to call into our show, we got a little bit of time left today. The number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743, or send us an email, radio@agphd.com. So we will get back to the Ag PhD mailbag in just a minute here. Before we do, we're just going to talk to Tony Wendler with Farm Shop MFG just a little bit. Tony, how you doing today?
I am doing great. Beautiful day like this in November. Can't be any better.
No, it is good. All right. So I wanted to talk to you real quick just about grain storage. Do you have any special concerns with, let's talk about corn for just a minute today. What I fear is a lot of people put grain in the bin and they said, oh, it's dry enough. But are number one, when you're out there harvesting what turns out to be average, call it 15, 16% moisture corn, there's going to be more damage absolutely to those corn kernels than normal. And number two, it's not going to be a consistent 15 or 16% moisture. I used to run our grain dryers on our farm for about 20 years, and I just know that even in every load, I mean, you've got a lot of, I mean, there's a little bit wet, there's a little bit dry. Sure, the average sounds fine, but those are my two concerns. So how do you feel about that with grain storage, and how should we be managing that?
Good and challenging questions. The you know, all the statements you made there are exactly right. You get this stuff into the bin, you'll have variable that maybe not necessarily from the point of view of writing the load, but you can actually have layers go in where you've got something that's perfect.
Yep.
And then the next stuff is maybe fairly wet, and the next one after that is down there to where a little dry. And so you have these layer issues, and you need to keep some air moving till you're sure you got everything under control. In my point of view, I got into the humidity sensors a while back, and looking at the, seeing how the humidity's moving, you're blowing your fans, and being able to detect, are we changing anything there? Is there any moisture migration? And if you've got something that you're layered, you can usually pick up a little bit of moisture migration. Some movement there. Now, if things really get out of control, you're going to start picking up heat. And that's where the old school sensors of sensing heat will pick it up and do a good job with it. So you got a handful of concerns there. You can't just dump it in and
forget it.
Forget about it.
Yep.
There's some challenges there, very much so.
Okay, so with the equipment that you have and bin fan controls and everything and sensors and all that, I mean, what do you advise a person to do when they put grain in that, quite frankly, they think is pretty good? All right, you're throwing 15, maybe 16% moisture grain in the bin. You say, no, I'm in pretty good shape, and the weather's going to be getting cold here. I think I'm fine. I mean, how would you advise them to set the equipment, and what should they be looking for?
Well, couple of different things. You know, first of all, if you think things are pretty close, we're getting into cold weather. Where I'm at, freeze it. Just freeze it for winter. Nothing, you want to monitor. You don't want to have any warm up, but just freeze the stuff. If you're not at a point where you're going to freeze it, what I really like is to have our fan controls set. We'll set a temperature range and we'll set a humidity range. I don't want to blow dry air in to overdry the bottom, and I don't want to blow a lot of wet air in to just not do us any good and perhaps compound some issues.
Now,
set the thing to go on and just have it run periodically, and then look at the hour meter and make sure it is running.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned freezing grain, and right away that, I mean, it sounds good, and it is, for many reasons, but the concern gets to be in the spring. And we, especially when we end up with sunny, warm days, how do you suggest a person brings that out of the freezing condition? Because if that's not done appropriately, all of a sudden you end up with spoilage around the edges of your bins.
Yes. That's I've had the same questions. I see these guys have these huge bins that they freeze them, they leave them frozen. I've always been puzzled with that. But for me, I've got small bins. I look at the once I start thawing a bin, I want to get it moving. First of all, you do not want to leave it too long, like you're saying. You do not want to have the sun heating up the outer surface, driving heat in, and you'll get that deterioration in a few inches or feet from the edge. I will look for a pattern in the weather where I know I can leave the fans on for several days and make sure I get that temperature front moved clear through. And I think that is important, that once you get that started, you need to keep it moving.
Well, what I was wondering is, couldn't you set the controls so you had the temperature, let's say, a little lower and change your humidity and then continue to raise it up just slowly over time? Or is that not a good idea?
Yes, you could. I haven't done it that way. But yes, you could. You could absolutely set the fan control and let it... just keep inching it up.
Yeah. Well, Tony, I got to throw out, the tough questions and the sometimes what seems like crazy ideas, because I'm trying to learn at the same time too. But I will say, we typically don't technically freeze our grain. I like getting it cold. I like getting it, 35, 40 degrees, something like that. I just don't like to have it completely frozen. But there are lots of people that do. And so that's part of the reason why I was asking. Well, again, we've been talking to Tony Wendler with Farm Shop MFG. If you want more information about Tony and some of the products that he has, including grain bin fan controls, just go to farmshopmfg.com. Tony, thanks for the time today. Appreciate it.
I appreciate it. You have a great day. Thanks.
Yep, bye-bye. You too. Thanks.
All right, Brian, let's dive into the Ag PhD mailbag here again. We got this from Zach in Northeast Nebraska, and Zach is looking for a lime recommendation. He said, I'm trying to figure out a plan going forward for calcium on this particular farm. Specifically, I'm questioning sample number 10. I believe it calls for 9.3 tons of lime based on the provided analysis. It's got a buffer pH of 5.9.
Yeah, part of the problem is it's a 25 CEC. He's got a lot of ground that's in the teens and about 20, but this is some of his heavier ground. And so when you're trying to raise pH, and especially when it's as low as it is, it's a 4.7 pH. And Darren already said the buffer index or buffer pH is 5.9. So yeah, it does require a lot of lime. Our concern gets to be if you start. So this is something we picked up from Neil Kinsey a number of years ago, that if you start putting more than 2,400 pounds of actual calcium, not 2,400 pounds of lime, 2,400 pounds of actual calcium, you start ending up with more tie-up with certain nutrients. And as people who like to overdo things just to see what happens, which we are, I can just tell you, when you overdo stuff, there are many other consequences that go along with that. So I would not do that. I would not go that far. If it's me, and a lot of times too, I'll typically tell people, at least go halfway. Do part of it and work on this over, let's call it 5 years. Because I want you to think about your 4.7 pH. Did that just happen overnight? Was that the way the ground was originally? No and no. This happened over many years. So if you try to fix it all of a sudden in one shot, you may end up causing some other nutrient issues that you weren't counting on. So I would approach it in 2 to 3 applications over 5 to 8 years. So there's you're going to get plenty of benefit out of it, even if you put on half the amount of lime that what they're talking about. And then let's just see how good that lime is over the next 2, 3, 4 years and see where you're at. So that's what I would do.
All right. Thanks for that question, Zach. We really appreciate that. Got a little bit of feedback here from Rick. He said, thank you, guys. I'm learning a lot from you. And also, I wanted to thank you for your occasional pivots to talk to grass farmers. We really value that information. Rick, thank you so much. Really appreciate the feedback.
Hey, and even it's like this lime deal here or the fertility things. I mean, I realize that we don't technically talk about grass very often here on the show, but we do talk about it some. And there are a lot of things that we're going to discuss that absolutely apply to grass crops. So hopefully we're going to continue feeding you some information over time. And if you ever have specific questions on your crop or your crops, just send them to radio@agphd.com. We'll try to cover them during the show. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
We now bring you an important news bulletin.
This just in from Live Action News.
Innovation has come to the world of burndown.
New Elevore herbicide controls your toughest weeds, even glyphosate and ALS-resistant weeds like mare's tail and henbit. Talk with your retailer about Elevore herbicide today and ask how you can start elevating your burndown.
I need the salve without the sell.
With NK Seeds, I get people I trust who show me where their hybrids and varieties fit in my field without the heavy sell.
So I get solutions that solve my problems from a partner who knows that success matters.
Find your solve at nkseeds.com.
Are you combining around weed patches, waiting for weeds to dry down, or tired of spring burndown failures? Save time, nutrients, and moisture by including a Valor herbicide brand in your fall burndown program. Valor provides excellent residual control of tough weeds, including kochia, mare's tail, prickly lettuce, dandelion, plus suppression of bromes. Proactive, effective weed resistance management starts in the fall. Get a clean start for your next season with Valor herbicide brands. Always read and follow label directions.
Maintaining your crops is as important now as it's ever been. Howler, a revolutionary fungicide from AgBiome, can help. It provides long-lasting protection from a broad spectrum of foliar and soil diseases that affect crops. Howler is OMRI listed, has multiple modes of action, and has minimal pre-harvest and re-entry intervals. It's flexible, easy to use, and is available right now. Visit agbiome.com/howler to learn more.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
A history of success means proven performance, but let's call performance what it is. Profitability. And boosting yours, no matter what the season brings, is the goal of DeKalb brand corn. Backed by exclusive genetics, whole farm solutions, and unmatched dealer support, let nothing shake your perseverance. Ask your dealer how DeKalb brand corn can help you realize a future of performance. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. It's a Farmer Friday. We're taking your calls at 844-44-AG-PHD, but we are also taking in a boatload of emails today, and some of them from overseas, too. This one comes from George in Bulgaria. He said, first of all, thanks for your radio program. Thanks for your support. I wonder what your opinion is in regards to using triple superphosphate and diammonium phosphate, or DAP, as fall fertilizers. My concern for the DAP is the amount of nitrogen in the product. I'm wondering, will it still be available for my corn crop next spring, or should I worry about leaching? To give you an idea, our weather here in Bulgaria, we get a lot of snow, and we also get rain during the winter, and I'm not sure whether the nitrogen would be leaching, and for that reason, I'm considering switching to triple superphosphate instead.
Yeah, I mean, you can go either way. A lot of times we're just looking at dollars and cents, and will most of that nitrogen still be there in the spring? Odds are high if you have ground that isn't pure sand and you're going to be cold in the wintertime. So for us, I mean, we're literally frozen in the wintertime for 5 months. And then on top of that, we don't get a lot of rainfall. Anyway, with diammonium phosphate, and that's the real key here, ammonium, that ammonium form, you're in pretty good shape for a while. Okay, it's not like it's already in the nitrate form, and also there's not very much in there. When you start talking 18460, or even when we talk MAP, monammonium phosphate, and it's 11520, it's not a super high percentage of nitrogen, and there's always some amount of nitrogen that gets tied up in residue. In the United States and in Canada, it's gone to less tillage than it used to be. So it used to be the moldboard plow, then you'd disc, then you'd field cultivate, and you go, wow, I mean, that ground is black. Well, now, very few people do that. There's a lot of residue out there, and there's some degree of nitrogen that gets tied up, it seems like, almost all the time in that high carbon residue. Till we get that carbon and nitrogen ratio flipped, then nitrogen will get tied up, locked up for a while. So those are some of the reasons why we don't get too concerned about the loss of the nitrogen that is found in DAP.
All right, thanks for the question. Got this from Craig in Wisconsin, and he said, we're farming about 3,500 acres of winter wheat, oats, barley, corn, and haven't had a whole lot of luck with soybeans, but we keep on trying. Just wondering what you think I should do to get the soil pH down. Looks like it's in the mid-7s. I've been putting on 300 to 400 pounds of potash each year, and my potash is starting to come up. On page 2, you can see my base saturations. But thanks for explaining the potash to me the other day, because I was thinking I was putting on close to 100% potassium with my potash, so I realized I was way off. I got a lot more questions to ask, but this is a field I'm going to put beans in next year, and I know that pH is too high.
At the beginning there, did he say good corn yield, struggling with beans?
Didn't say the soybean or corn yields, but he said winter wheat, oats, barley, corn, that's all going well. But the beans
so you did say corn. Right. And the reason why is the potassium levels. And this is what we talk about all the time. That, you know, it's number one, many people think of soybeans as a scavenger crop, and that's incorrect. Soybeans have roughly 1/5 the root mass of corn. They are not a scavenger crop. Corn's a way better scavenger crop than beans. So that's the first thing. The second thing is for a lot of us, I think we've always kind of assumed, you know, soybeans don't take a crazy amount of nutrients. But come to find out, at the peak for soybeans, their peak demand on potassium is ridiculously high. If let's just say I'm going for a really good bean yield, okay, and usually we're talking approximately 3 to 1. So let's say it was 70 bushel beans, 210 bushel corn, that's about right. So if you're getting 210 bushel corn, you should be getting 70 bushel beans. But the problem is when you're low on potassium, and this is classic for many farmers in North America, period. I would say probably 80 to 90% of soil tests we look at have insufficient potassium for soybeans. So that's why people have good corn yields, but their soybean yields struggle. Because at the very, very peak, when you're going after the big time yields on beans, it's probably going to take double the amount of potassium on a per day basis. Not for a lot of days, but for a few days, versus what a corn crop would take. The corn's going to take some potassium all throughout the season, but the peak load for beans is massive. Now, the next thing is when we start talking about all those other crops, all those grass crops, the small grains and corn, where the potassium really comes in there is stalk quality and stalk strength and stalk size. So, for example, the derecho, everybody's talking about that in Iowa. All right. What I would encourage anybody who had that go through to do is go to where it's the worst and go to where you find some corn that actually stood okay. and soil test in both of those areas. The odds are you're going to find higher potassium levels along with copper and manganese. Those are also keys for stalk quality. It's potassium, copper, manganese, and I guess you could also throw drainage in there, because if the roots aren't allowed to grow down and big, then you're going to have a problem. But anyway, I know I'm going slightly off topic here, but the point is you need potassium, and that's the number one reason why we're having issues. So when you ask the question, how can I lower pH, I would look at, rather than focusing on that, let's fix some of these nutrient issues that we have. You've got zinc less than one part per million. You've got boron less than a half part per million. You've got phosphorus levels less than 14. You've got potassium levels that are what I would call really deficient. So fix all those things. What soil pH is it's basically a representation of your overall nutrient balance. And so if you simply get a lot of your other nutrients balanced, you might find that pH will come down naturally. Plus, I'll throw one other thing in. If you do everything that's right for the crop, you're going to see more root growth. Well, more root growth means more organic acids are kicked into the soil. What does acid do? It lowers the pH. So I think you can fix this thing naturally. The next thing I'll throw out to you is I don't see copper or iron on your soil test, nor do I see sodium. So I would like to know what those things are just to make sure that we've got nutrients in balance and get a, I'll leave it at that.
All right. Thanks for the questions. Okay. We got a couple of soil tests here, Brian. This one's from Charles and sent kind of a long email. So I'll maybe summarize. He's talking about these different fields that he's got. He got a new truck and got SiriusXM and was really excited to find the Rural Radio channel and excited to find our show. First of all, thank you so much, Charles, for listening. He said he thought, what the heck? I'll pull some soil samples and see what you guys think, and then I'll have some of your information for my own farm.
Yeah, and every day when we talk about soil tests, it seems like, I say the word variability. He has pH as low as 5 and pH as high as 7. So I don't know how big these grids or zones are, but when I see a variance like that, that tells me we need to have smaller grids and zones. Just like
yeah, here's with, a picture, Brian. It looks like some of those are really small fields too.
Well, it's hard to tell. Yep, really hard to tell. But anyway, and you know, even with the nutrients, I see a lot of variance there too. So there's one spot where the organic matter is 8%, the phosphorus is 50, and the potassium is good. It's 6%. So, you know, you get to areas like that, and I go, wow, you're in pretty good shape. I might be focused a lot more on the micronutrients there than I am even the major nutrients, because your major nutrients, you're doing pretty good. I'd still put crop removal out, but that's about it. But then you've got other spots where, I mean, I'll read this, because Darren, you might find this interesting. We've got pH as low as 5 in one spot. Base saturation K there is 1.3. And it's 18 for a cation exchange capacity, so that's on the high end of what we would call a medium soil texture. But yeah, when you're that low on pH and that low on potassium, it's going to be hard to raise a good crop. And also there, you need some phosphorus. So, I mean, those are the first things that we're typically going to look at. And then beyond that, like I said, I would look a little bit at your micronutrients. You know, you're low on copper, you're low on boron. A lot of the copper is one part per million. A lot of the boron is less than a part per million or even less than half a part per million. So just start working on some of those things. But always, we got to focus on pH, especially if it's low. We got to look at P and K and then start working from there. Oh, hey, one other nutrient I forgot to throw in was sulfur. And that's another nutrient that we talk about almost every day here on the show, saying it's low. We need more sulfur. And I think part of the reason why almost everybody's having this issue with sulfur, and I don't care where you are, Canada, the United States, a lot of countries, it's because we have cleaner air today than we did 30 years ago. So our dads and our grandpas had, well, number one, they had much lower yield goals. But number two, they had this, what a lot of people would call polluted air. I would call it nutrient-rich air. And they were getting free sulfur raining down on their fields. So as a farmer, it was amazing. Now, yeah, we didn't live as long, but we had free fertilizer. And my point is, we aren't getting that so much anymore. So we need to be throwing at least a little bit, I'm not saying crazy amounts, but at least a little bit more sulfur in almost all of our fertility programs as farmers today.
Thanks for listening to our show today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.